trombone, Ory's Creole trombone, and then a spirited version by the Waters Band of Some of These Days.
Thank you.
Kelly's Creole Trombone and Some of These Days, Lou Waters, the Yerba Buena Jazz Band at Hambone Kelly's. Although in the Bay Area, it was usually unwise to be critical of the Yerba Buena Band at this time, lest your comments be interpreted as those of a disbeliever, by the post-war years, there were some rather firm criticisms of the Yerba Buena Band style that had been published both in this country and abroad. The principal opposition to the Waters' way of doing things came in the fields of dynamics and rhythm. Lou Waters confirmed that he had heard many of these criticisms and proceeded to explain the background of his band's style.
Original plan was to play like we used to play out at the Big Bear, and out there we certainly didn't plan dynamics. I'm not against them, but the general plan was to play absolutely free. We didn't, occasionally we might have, but very rarely did we ever use planned dynamics, like on a certain tunes, it's almost a built-in part of the tune, but even then we ignored them. And I'm not against dynamics, but I think over-planned dynamics are usually instituted by piano players, and it's just something you don't do when you go out to play at a session. I mean, and as our band was founded on the principles of playing at a session, we never used them in that sense. I mean, and at the same time, I think if people listen carefully, they'll find out that the volume of the band varied quite a bit anyway, and just naturally.
And as far as the rhythm is concerned, a lot of that would follow the same way.
Yeah, the rhythm, they had their own choice as far as what they played. One thing there that I might add, that I don't know if I'm getting too technical, but we set the band up so the rhythm played along just like they wanted, at full volume, and didn't try to follow the instruments too much. In other words, after World War II, when we got together, I remember telling them that the rhythm section, if anybody's to be blamed on this, they can blame me, but I remember telling the rhythm section to play right on, and if they shot the horns dead one by one, that they weren't even to bat an eye, you know. In other words, quite a few jazz bands, they follow the horn that's playing the solo or the lead, and they follow him closely like a shadow. And if, like I say, if anybody's to blame in that, it's me, because I said that if they shot the four horns dead, that they were to go right on playing like nothing happened. Of course, that's maybe impossible, but that was the idea, because there was such a thing going on there that was a duck and dodge thing with rhythm sections. If the horn staggered, rhythm sections would stagger. The shadow would stagger right behind the horn, and I was trying to get away from that.
Since the dancers, you almost always played for dancing, other than rallies and at least one Saturday morning broadcast that I can remember.
Yeah, that's true.
Did they have any physical effect upon the way that you wanted the band to sound, or was it just the fact that the enthusiasm was enough to keep it going many times?
Well, we always felt that with people out there dancing and some listening and not dancing, it provided a good natural atmosphere for the band to play to. I mean, it took away the stiffness of, let's say, if you just had an audience listening, like concert style. I felt that the band played better with the two things going on. Some people listening, some dancing. And even when we used to play the informal sessions up at the Big Bear, there'd always be a certain amount of people dancing.
Of course, in mentioning the Big Bear, would have to be explained that you're going back pretty far.
Yeah, I am. I'm going back to almost back to the middle 30s. And
the Big Bear was located in Redwood Canyon.
Redwood Canyon above Berkeley, and about the same time, a little later, the band was playing at Sweet's Ballroom.
And that led eventually into the Dawn Club.
That's right.
And from the Dawn Club, the Yerba Buena Band spread the gospel according to Lou Waters. Here's the way the band sounded a few years later, first with the full eight-piece personnel on original Dixieland one-step, and then with the small band featuring Lou's cornet on The Blues My Naughty Sweetie Gives to Me.
Thank you.
Dixieland One Step and The Blues My Naughty Sweetie gives to me, Lou Waters at Hambone Kelly's. The Yerba Buena Jazz Band was composed of professional musicians who almost unanimously were refugees from sweet hotel-type dance bands of the mid-1930s. The original band, which gradually came under the control of the lead trumpeter, Lou Waters, worked out arrangements, both on paper and in their heads, after months of hard work devoted to record notating and rehearsals. Some of the original bandsmen played for dancing at Sally Rand's Nude Ranch on the gateway of the 1939 Treasure Island Exposition. And coincidentally, 8 years later, it was Miss Rand's extravagant girly show Roadhouse, which the post-war Yerba Buena band bought and renamed Hambone Kelly's in Albany. The first regular appearances of the Yerba Buena band occurred at the monthly Friday evening San Francisco Jazz Society meetings in the spring and fall of 1940. The group was also performing frequently for campus dances in the Bay Area during that time. This was the so-called original pre-war Waters Band, two trumpets, clarinet, trombone, piano, tuba, drums, and two banjos, based upon and often trying very hard to sound like the great King Oliver Creole Jazz Band of 1923. This was the band which made the set of Jazzman records and inadvertently became worldwide leaders in the post-war revival of interest in earlier jazz styles. The criticisms leveled at the 1941 band continued, especially from overseas, for the entire life of the Yerba Buena band, a gross injustice since the self-consciousness and metronomic plodding rhythm of the young band of 41 was almost entirely eliminated a few years later. Here now, good examples of the change, and also good examples of just how bad the commercially issued recordings of this band actually are. The 1942 band, a version of High Society, and then a lengthy 1946 playing of Maple Leaf Rag.
Thank you.
pre-war High Society by the Waters Band and a post-war Maple Leaf Rag. That comparison demonstrates better than volumes of words just what the Waters Band defenders meant when they defined, or denied, I should say, the heaviness of rhythm within the later group. There was very little swing to the Waters Band, as they say, but a great deal of rock to the rhythm and the style of the whole group. The first batch of Yerba Buena Jazz Band records were cut in late 1941 and the spring of 42. The band was broken up in the summer of 42 due to the war and resumed playing again on March 1, 1946 at the Dawn Club in San Francisco. During the war, none of the men were musicians per se in the service, although Lou was given extra duty for a time in Hawaii to help organize a big dance orchestra. Turk Murphy, as well as Bob Scobie, played extensively while off duty with various jazz groups wherever they were. The real tragedy, recording-wise, was the fact that all of the West Coast Company issues, those now available on Good Time Jazz, were cut in the spring of 1946, after the band had been reorganized for only a few weeks. The recording apparatus was primitive, and the band very often shaky. It is from these sessions that almost all post-mortem appraisal of the band has been made. You have already heard in weeks gone by considerably better representations of the post-war Yerba Buena band than those generally available. I hope the remaining selections tonight will add to your enjoyment and enlightenment. Here is a 1947 version of Chattanooga Stomp, and then a fine job, especially by Murphy, of Muskrat Ramble from a year earlier. Thank you. recordings from 1947, Chattanooga Stomp, and 1946, The Muskrat Ramble. The name Yerba Buena Jazz Band is correctly applied to the 8 or 9-piece band of 1940-42 and 46-8. When Turk Murphy and Bob Scobie had left the band for good, and Clancy Hayes had returned to replace Harry Mordecai on banjo and add vocals to the band, the sound of the Hambone Kellys group was considerably altered. When the first records by this smaller group appeared on Lou's own Down Home label, he was clear to title the band Lou Waters and His Jazz Band. But within a few months, when Norman Granz signed them up for Mercury, he reverted to the use of the Yerba Buena name for obvious commercial purposes, and thus instigated a highly confusing situation, especially for old-timers who try to explain just why the Waters Band was so distinctive when many record purchasers have bought only the small group offerings. Here are two semi-pop tunes by the later band, the first including some of Lou's best-recorded muted trumpet work behind Clancy Hayes' vocal on Oh By Jingo, and then the second showing his biting lead trumpet style on Sweethearts on Parade.
Thank you.
by Jingo and Sweethearts on Parade, the Lou Waters Band, 1949 and 50. Clancy Hayes, of course, on the vocal chorus, Oh by Jingo. To conclude, here are two more from early 1950. Terrible Blues, which the band always played for intentional difficulty in D flat. And finally, another tune from the Louis Armstrong Big Band book, which is typical of a whole flood of new material which Lou and Bob Helm were working over during the last months at Hambone Kelly's, Dusky Stevedore.